Good morning. It's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. The U.S. Supreme Court just announced it will allow the Trump administration to continue enforcing its wait in Mexico policy for asylum seekers. This despite lower court rulings that the policy probably is illegal. The justice's order over a dissenting vote by Justice Sonia Sotomayor overturns a lower court order that would have blocked the policy, at least for people arriving at the border crossings here in California and in Arizona. The high court action comes a day before the lower court order was to have taken in effect. Instead, the Remain in Mexico policy will remain in force while a lawsuit challenging it plays out in the courts. Joining us now is most recently two-term mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel. He was chief of staff for President Obama, and prior to that, high-ranking official in the Clinton administration. His new book, The Nation City, Why Mayors Are Now Running the World. Rahm Emanuel, welcome to Air Talk.
Thanks, Larry. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thanks. First of all, your thoughts about Joe Biden's stunning performances over the last two Tuesdays.
Well, I think that there's a number of things that bear out that I think are important that, in my view, blow away some misperceptions of the party. The Democratic Party is still a center-left party, not a left party. There was an explosion of turnout, but not what Bernie Sanders predicted among, quote-unquote, the revolution or the movement. It's all these new suburban voters that have come into the party. Now, about a year ago, a little over a year ago, actually, I've been talking about this new governing metropolitan majority between suburban and urban voters becoming the base of the Democratic Party. And I think that now, while it's a primary, not a general, where you see the explosion in the D.C. suburbs of Virginia, the suburbs around Richmond, where you see that in North Carolina, where you saw it last night in Michigan, in Oakland County, the suburbs of Detroit, but also going back to 2018, where we flipped red districts to blue districts are all in these suburban areas that are key to winning a state like a Michigan, like a Pennsylvania, like a North Carolina, like an Arizona. And the truth of the matter is, if you go back to President Clinton, President Obama, the 2006 and 18, that playbook has been the same for all six of those elections. And so I think that what I really believe is that the perceptions going into this that somehow the party's emerging loud voice was going to be this fiery left. It's unlike the Republicans that become an angry populist party, we're still basically a center-left party, and that's the governing coalition for the Democrats.
Even with
the good news is it's early. What's that?
I was going to say, even with the polls of Democrats showing that when it comes to policy issues, they do appear to have moved left?
I do. Well, first of all, the number one policy goal is getting rid of Trump. And people, voters have been very consistent that electability trumps ideology. Second is self-identified moderates and conservatives within the Democratic Party actually have grown in the polling. And, you know, Medicare for All was about how do you ensure universal health care. There's no disagreement about the Democratic Party about universal health care. The disagreement was how do you best achieve it, not whether you should achieve it. And I think people, you know, one of the lessons I have in 30-some-odd years of politics, don't ever confuse the means with the ends. Everybody has a consensus in the Democratic Party. Ensuring universal coverage and access to health care is something we believe in. Now, Medicare for All, which I have trouble with, was one idea that was offered. There are plenty of other ideas for still getting to the same destination. Well, I don't think, let's take an example, we all agree that high school education is our public commitment is not sufficient for the 21st century. It was good enough in the 20th century. It's not right now. It doesn't mean that everybody's for free college. You know, and I don't want to parlay that into my book, but we were the first city in the United States to offer, if you got a B average in high school, we made community college, transportation, and books free. Over 8,000 kids in Chicago have already taken advantage of that. That was another way towards making sure that the public commitment towards higher education, not just in high school, that's where it ended, was something I believed in. I don't believe in free college. I don't think my three children should get public support for education. Amy and I can provide it. But making sure that others can is something I believe in, and that's why 81% of the kids that have taken the Chicago Star Scholarship are the first one in their families to go to college. That's the type of ideas and energy that you're looking for. So when you say the policy, one, hear the voters. Beating Trump is their singular goal. Two, there's a lot more, there's agreement on the purpose of government, the policies, the agendas to be pursued in the sense of the goals. We're talking about what is the best means to get it.
We're talking with Rahm Emanuel, two-term mayor of Chicago, former chief of staff to President Obama, and senior advisor to President Bill Clinton, also with other senior roles in the Democratic Party over the years. If you have questions for him, you can ask them on the AirTalk page, kpecc.org, or you can also tweet at AirTalk or post on the AirTalk Facebook page. One of the things that we've been seeing in California cities has been a loss of the middle class, because housing costs are so extraordinarily high. So you have well-to-do people who've been able to stay, or older people who have been able to stay in their homes because they're not renters, or in some cases they have rent control. What is your prescriptive for cities avoiding the hollowing out of the middle class?
Well, first of all, let's take it at a couple levels, okay? One is, you're right about the issue of housing, and you're also right about the issue of hollowing out of the middle class. So let me try to break this up and to deal with it in different pieces. The housing is a piece of that, and it's a manifestation. I'm not sure it's totally 100% a cause. One is, and again, I want to get back, let me deal with education. Right now, education is a divide. And the goal is, how do we make education something that brings people together and bridges income inequality? I tab it in my book that this is a diploma divide. And it harks back to something I remember when, in the worst moments of the recession as President Obama's chief of staff, when unemployment had reached 11% in the United States, and we hadn't seen that since the Depression, the unemployment rate for people with a college degree was 4.6%. Meaning a diploma post-high school was probably the best insurance policy to weather one of the worst economic downturns. And we have a system in this country of public assistance from K to 12. And the truth is, we're not going to need to get to a pre-K to college model. Now, in Chicago, we added 4 years to a child's life. We made kindergarten full-day universal throughout the city, which it had not been. We made full-day pre-K universal for all four-year-olds, full-day in the city of Chicago. And we added an hour and 15 minute to every day. And that, when you add that all up, it came to 4 more years of educational time for a child. But in addition to that, we created what I told you, which was the Chicago Star Scholarship. If you get a B average, community college is free. 50% of all the children in the city of Chicago public school system, the third largest in the United States, were graduating with college credit from high school. And more importantly, our kids, based, 84% of them are from poverty or below based on income. Yet they were matching the United States with 44% going to college and another 21% going to community college. Because we have this fundamental belief that every demographic that would say, every report that would say, not those kids, not that background. We can't just stop at high school. We have to have a public pathway and a support for something past high school. And as I said to you, 81% of the 8,000 kids that took the Chicago Star Scholarship, they're the first ones in their family to go to college. They're not just getting the education for a job. They're getting the education for a career. That helps establish a middle class and a middle class that can live in the city. Second, you got to continue on the housing side, dealing with that one manifestation of the middle class squeeze. You have to deal with the issue of affordability. Now, I have studied this issue. Every mayor is looking at it. It's going to not require just a policy, but a set of policies, from things that you do on new high rises that are luxurious going up for affordability, set asides going into an affordable housing trust fund, new tax policies, new other types of support that go into efforts, density issues. So you're going to have to come at this a multitude of ways to ensure that the middle class can also afford to stay in the city, and housing is affordable. I think rent control, where it's looked at, in my own personal view, it creates distortions that doesn't address the issue. But what they're trying to scratch at is a real problem.
Well,
one last thing.
I just need to break in. I'm sorry, we need to take a break. We'll continue, though, with Rahm Emanuel, author of The Nation City, Why Mayors Are Now Running the World. We'll talk about some of the challenges California cities face with pensions as well as with budget deficits. Dow down nearly 1,400 points today. It puts it on track to enter a bear market, which would be the end of an extraordinary era of stock gains for the past nearly 11 years. So that's the bad news out of Wall Street so far today. Joining us on Air Talk, former Chicago mayor, former chief of staff for President Obama, Rahm Emanuel. His new book, The Nation City, Why Mayors Are Now Running the World. And in the book, Mayor Emanuel lays out all the ways in which cities have been able to move ahead with progressive policies where the federal government, because of congressional infighting or lack of leadership generally, haven't been able to make progress. And outlined are such things as public transit innovations, ways of making urban cores more pedestrian friendly, improving the environment, taking on federal policies on immigration and others where local residents disagree. Rahm Emanuel, certainly there are many of those things where cities have effectively been able to do things the federal government hasn't, but there are also huge challenges. Public employee pensions, teacher pensions, a huge issue here in California, trying to come up with the tax dollars to cover that. We've also got public transit ridership cratering here in California, as it is in much of the country. So my question for you is, how are you so optimistic about the progress of cities when they have so many intractable challenges?
Well, must be the medication's working. No. No, here's the thing. Let me try to give a synopsis of the book. One is the center of gravity is moving towards our cities. And when you think of a period of time where people want more influence about their government and ability to affect the policies that affect the way they live their lives, where you live, Larry, how you get to work, the amenities of your neighborhood and community, from schools to parks to libraries, those are all services that your city provides. What's also new about this, those are historic. What's new is that when it comes to issues like income inequality, minimum wage increases, all led by cities. When it comes to climate change, given the federal government's abandoned those challenges, cities are in the forefront with the policies that have actually made a real difference in greenhouse gas emissions. When it comes to being a welcoming city for new immigrants, cities now are taking on more and more responsibilities that used to be the real estate of the national government. And I do believe progressive policies are being initiated and substantiated. What I think is different is more things are now being asked of our local government than ever before. And the good news is more people have confidence in local government at 75% than they do the national government at like 23, 24%. Now, I want and desire a federal partner. As a mayor, I thought it was very, very important. I can't beg it into existence. Therefore, I had to take on, like the mayor of Garcetti has, where I talk about in the book, he and I kind of were the leaders of modernizing our airports, leaders in being a welcoming city and using your libraries as a way to actually help people become citizens and doing citizenship corners in our libraries, things that used to be totally, again, the purview of the national government. Now, that said, these are big, big challenges, but I do think rather than policies being developed locally and then moving up nationally, policies today don't move vertical, they move horizontal. And cities all replicate those same kind of progressive politics that they see in other cities that they think are beneficial for their city's future. And I think that's where our politics are going. We do have intractable problems. I raise in the book, not intractable problems, I raise in the book at the end the notion that the federal government basically and I may say this to be dramatic, but basically has become an aircraft carrier that pays Social Security and Medicare. And that if the local governments that are leaders in progressive investments in early childhood education, new neighborhood libraries, post-high school education, modernizing their transportation, if they don't watch some of these legacy costs and tax policies, that we're going to become a version of the federal government, a public safety budget that pays legacy costs of retirement and health care. And therefore, we have to manage them. Now, we have those challenges in the city of Chicago, a place that, you know, I used to joke when I left President Obama's side, the last thing I ever wanted to work on again was health care. But that's what I did. And when I left office as mayor, our health care costs were 7% less than on a projected basis than when I walked into the office. We did a lot of different things, from a wellness plan, from making sure that we dealt with networks, copays, deductibles, understanding the needs of older city employees versus younger city employees. And it allowed and freed up resources to then plow back into making other types of investments across the city. We doubled the size of our summer jobs program. We more than 100% grew our mentoring program. And because we were able to get a more manageable, more stable system around our healthcare costs, we ended up producing the resources to make significant investments in our public. Now, again, I would love to have a full-fledged federal partner. Absent that, you just don't stand on the sidelines just rubbing your hands and say, woe is me. And that is the case of what's going on in cities today across the country. There are problems, serious problems, have to be managed, but I still believe local government has the support of its public to do affirmative progressive policies.
We're talking with Rahm Emanuel, two-term mayor of Chicago, former chief of staff for President Obama. His new book, The Nation's City, Why Mayors Are Now Running the World. Wanted to ask you about President Obama. He's not endorsed in the presidential race. What are your thoughts about why he hasn't inserted himself to this point?
Well, I think that he believes that there will be a process, the voters should make that decision, and he wants to play a role at the end of bringing a unifier that brings, given how the primary may work its way through, be somebody that can bring the party together at the end so we're focused on the singular goal that all Democrats have, which is to remove President Trump from the Oval Office.
If President Obama goes out and actually actively campaigns for the party's nominee, let's say that it is Joe Biden, how do you expect that to play, particularly given that a number of the Democratic candidates seem to run away from President Obama and the administration you were part of instead of embracing it?
Well, I have a slight disagreement. There was a debate that some Democrats led an effort to say President Obama, you know, to run away, as you said, from President Obama. I think they saw quite quickly, and if you look at the end, after that debate and getting whacked around, every one of them were running ads with President Obama. You thought President Obama endorsed all the candidates.
Michael Bloomberg, and yeah, everybody had.
Yeah, so ads. So before I would broad stroke what happened, it was a singular debate driven primarily by one candidate, and I think it was actually all. They realized after the debate what a colossal strategic mistake that was. You got a president, and here's my one message to Democrats. In the last 100 years, there have been three Democrats who have been reelected: Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, President Bill Clinton, and President Obama. Two of them are alive. And they showed you, and their paradigm to winning in 1992 and 2008 and winning reelection was very similar to what was going to work in this election. And the idea that either on the politics or on the policy, you would abandon what they've done and shown to be the combination to the electoral lock was really a folly. And I think their campaigns quickly realized what a mistake that was and have embraced President Obama, his agenda, and building off it. President Obama never said, I think his quote was, the race to progress is never over and there's no finish line in it. And I'll hand my baton off to the next person who will build off of what I have established, whether that's in the area of healthcare, in the area of climate change, in the area of early childhood education. And I think that, to me, was the right way to think of it. And the Democrats during the presidential debate that had a momentary lapse of judgment paid for it.
Do you have any concerns if Joe Biden is the nominee about his age, about him not being as you know, quick on the draw, sharp as he was even 4 years ago? Does that concern you?
No.
Why not?
Because I think, look, I've worked with Joe over the years. The chief of staff's office and the vice president's office are abut each other, are adjacent. I've seen him work, his work ethic. I've seen his discipline. And the other interesting thing is what really hasn't been talked about in his Obama years. Joe Biden got all the tougher issues to handle, implementing the stimulus bill, making sure, you know, dealing with America's withdrawal from Iraq and those issues. And he took really the kind of non-sexy, unpopular issues or very difficult ones. And he, the incredible amount of focus, discipline, when there wasn't a lot of energy around it, told me that he has both the judgment and the ability to see something from beginning to end and finish it through. But my relationship goes with the vice president all the way back when I was responsible for passing the assault weapon ban for the President Clinton. I was responsible also to helping pass the issues that Joe worked on as part of the crime bill, which was the Violence Against Women Act, the first time ever the federal government established crimes for violence against women. That was then Senator Biden's bill. And I've seen him and literally have worked with him at one level or another over the last 20 plus years. And I think he has incredible work ethic, incredible judgment, and a surprising level of energy.
Thank you so much, Mayor Rahm Emanuel, for being with us. We appreciate it. His book is The Nation City, Why Mayors Are Now Running the World. Rahm Emanuel, former chief of staff to President Obama as well.